try and hit with this rubber band.
You gotta hit the light and just shatter it.
The light? I've already shattered it once. Let's shatter it again. Dude, that went like a wet
box.
What?
You almost made it in the box.
Oh, damn. That's like a wet turd. It was just all slow. And...
No movie's really good that I watched recently that kind of caught me off guard, and I immediately went and pre-ordered the Blu-ray. Cobweb. I think we talked about this.
You mentioned Cobweb. I have not watched it yet.
Cobweb, but no, I liked it. It from everybody that I've seen, everybody kind of had the same feelings that I did, that it's very, like, it feels the way that they, like, with the music and the atmosphere and the way that they shot the film and everything, it feels very, like, fairy tale-esque, and I think they captured that perfectly. And Anthony Starr is a great, terrifying antagonist.
Yeah, I do like him.
Homelander.
Quite a bit.
And then the mom that in the movie, she was really good. And the ending I did not see coming, and it's weird. I like it.
Speaking of movies, I actually watched the Newkirk's new movie, The Unbinding.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. In case anyone out there is like, what? The creators of Hellier. And yeah, it was about, you know, one of their objects that they just happened to get one day that they nicknamed the Catskill Crone, I think. I can't remember if it's Catskill or Catskills, but it's from like the Catskill Mountains, I think.
Okay.
But apparently these people were out one day and they found like a little kind of cave entrance and this little like effigy thing sitting there. And it kind of had like a little rope around its neck, like a noose, and it had nails in its eyes.
Interesting.
And they said a bunch of weird shit started happening, you know, typical ghost paranormal activity, stuff moving around, especially the effigy moving around. Then there were sightings of like an old kind of hag, you know, old wrinkly kind of woman, all decrepit looking and whatnot.
Don't like that.
No. And they would see like wet footprints.
Oh, don't like that.
And Greg and Dana, of course, are talking, you know, we get a lot of these 99% of the time. It's really nothing to them. Like, nothing happens. It's kind of like, you know, we have a cool collection here. So yada, yada, yada. But like that last 1%, you know, some things might happen. And then that last like one of the one is when things really start happening. And that's the case for this thing, because they started having stuff happening, too. And they showed some footage in the documentary of like of an orb passing by, and like at the exact same time the orb is moving, you see the effigy like move ever so slightly.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, The Unbinding is pretty cool, and they basically, you know, did like a they took it back to where it was because it kept doing weird shit.
As you do.
Where they found it, and they did like a ritual for it.
How weird would it be? They go back, the cave is not there.
Well, like, it starts off as, and I don't mean to like ruin the whole damn documentary here, so if you don't want to listen to me, then you can skip ahead another like 20 seconds or so.
Okay, hold on.
But it starts off thinking, oh my God, it's a paranormal, you know, haunted type of object, and then you get like ghost, quote unquote, ghost-like activity, and then it turns out to doing a little bit of research and like, oh my God, what if it's this like pagan deity?
Ooh.
Oh yeah, it goes all across the map. It's about an hour and a half long, but I rented it off Amazon Prime for about $5.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I don't want to spoil any more for you, because there's some pretty neat stuff that happens throughout that movie.
Amazon Prime is really good for, like, if you have any interest in any kind of cryptid, there's all kinds of documentaries you can find on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah.
Whether for free or to rent for, like, $4 or $5. Like, I know most of, like, Small Town Monster stuff's on there. The Newkirks, all their stuff's on there. So, yeah, if you ever looking for anything cryptid, just go to Amazon Prime and type in that cryptid, and I'm sure something will pop up.
Absolutely. But yeah, Newkirk's, great job. I approve of it. There's your free promotion right there on our show.
And they're from our city, and they're from our city, and we've yet to meet them. Why are you avoiding us?
Do they still live here?
I don't know. They might.
I don't know, because I keep seeing things about Cincinnati, Ohio, and them, and then it's like years ago. I'm like, I wonder if they moved. I don't know. I don't follow.
They're like originally from Canada or something.
I think so. Oh, well. So. Anyway, who are we? TFR.
That's us. So what's TFR stand for?
The farthest reaches. Oh, baby.
You all right over there?
Yeah, I am. My nipples are just hard, and I don't know why.
Oh. Are they like chafing? Have you ever had that happen? Where you like your nipples get hard and they like chafe on your shirt?
Yeah, a little bit, but it isn't right now, but I just I'm constantly touching myself.
I'm sure all the women are like listening to us say like, yeah, it's an everyday problem. Fucking bitch.
If no one will love me, I'll love me.
Okay.
My mom always like, yeah. And for some reason, they're just hard, and they were hard before I touched them. So I don't want anyone out there going, oh, well, you rub your own nipples. Now they're like fucking hard as hell. No. It was all before that, people. That's why I touched them. But yeah, this is the Farthest Reaches. This is a TFR news episode.
Boop, boop, boop.
Let's update the people on what's happening.
What's happening?
What's happening? Well, first of what's happening is I'm going to say my name. I am Matthew, and I am here with Joshua hanging out.
That's me.
That's him. The goo crew. The poon goons. What's up?
Sure.
I guess all I can do is make, like, sexual jokes, I guess.
It's all you're good for. It's all right.
I know. Nothing. I don't. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The.
The who?
Good band. That's all I got. I'm sorry. I apologize to everybody out there. So some house cleaning. Merch. This is not the first time we've said it.
My shirt.
You can go to TeePublic, or you can reach us directly if you would like one. You can go to TeePublic. I mean, you can even go to our social media and check out what the design is. It's nice. It has a chupacabra on it, and it says, I got sucked by the chupacabra.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking of other shirt ideas. I have a couple in the box. I told you one of them.
You did. And I'm afraid to say any of them on the air because I know there's like so many people out there will just fucking take them.
Somebody's going to steal it.
Yeah.
Astonishing legend, you bastards.
Dude, they're going to resent us. Next time we see them, they're just going to look away and they're not going to associate with us anymore.
It's fine.
No, I want them to. Oh, yeah, we have merch. You want to go check that out. Like I said, TeePublic, or if you want to reach out to us personally, we have some here in the studio with us.
Right there. I can see it.
Yeah, right there.
Right there.
I can almost touch it.
Almost.
My wingspan's not big enough, though. But yeah, we're on social media, you know, TFR Podcast at Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of those. Check us out. We have a website, thefarthestreachespodcast.com. You can check out more about our episodes on there. We have a lot of links where we find our sources, a lot of pictures you can go through. There's even a make a contact page if you want to reach us directly. If you don't want to do it, you know, say by email or find us on social media, you can go to our website. With that said, it is becoming more and more each passing day into the spooky season. We know that that pinnacle of it is on October 31st.
Yep, yep.
And on that day, we, TFR, do listener tales.
Send us your stories.
Send us your stories. You can do it directly through social media. You can do it by the email, our website, the main contact page that I, you know, the aforementioned here. And they can be anything. It can be ghosts. It can be UFOs. It can be vampires. Whatever you have to share or perhaps share on the behalf of somebody else, you can send it our way and we can discuss it on air and just have a good old time.
Yeah.
It'll be like you're there in the room with us.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe we'll have a guest speaker. Just throwing that out there. Maybe we can talk Brady into coming
maybe
back
from
for
this
a
world
special
or
episode.
Maybe from this world or another.
Yeah.
Or this life or the next.
Yeah.
Who knows what the guest will be? Just Genghis Khan sitting there. Hey, buddy. Or Attila the Hun. He's sweet. See, I'm not good at these jokes. Anyway, Matthew, Josh, TFR News, let's bring it all in here and start delivering what we got. First few are very quick, just touching over, not too much detail to go into, especially when you hear what I'm going to say. And that is, for one, David Perkins has died. Now,
oh no.
Who's David Perkins? Well, David Perkins, he was known within a small circle of mutologists. And
what was that word?
Mutologists. Yeah, my bad. I know I kind of blah, 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 the first time. But he was like the prime researcher of, you know, the mid-1970s era of like cattle mutilations.
Okay, that's what I thought that was going to be, but I had no idea that mutologist was an actual thing.
Yeah, I don't even know exactly what a mutologist is.
The study of mutilations, I guess.
Oh, is it the study of mutilations? I'm going to say no, but that would be cool as fuck. Google has nothing for me. It says, did you mean mythologist?
Oh, so no. It's a made-up term. Okay.
It's a made-up term. So maybe it is about mutilations.
It makes sense.
I'll be damn.
If he was like one of the lead people on it.
Yeah. This comes from OurStrangePlanet.com. a nice little like recap of everything he did and all that. It's a pretty good article. Way too long for me to read. But yeah, it just says Perkins was among our last mid-1970s era cattle mutilation researchers, and it's most noteworthy.
R.I.P.
David, a superb analyst, is best known as the first
analyst
theorist. This is not a fake laugh track. This is actually us. He's best known as the first theorist to notice the approximately correlation of irradiated regions of high incidence of cattle mutilations, downwind and downstream from areas where we see nuclear power plants, missile silos, uranium mines, and other places where we utilize fissionable materials.
You know what else hovers around those areas? UFOs.
Butterflies.
Yes.
He further expanded his theory into a general, quote-unquote, environmental monitoring that today has the strongest argument to support this explanation as a potential major motivation for the mystery mutilators. But yeah, sorry to see David Perkins go. Thank you for everything you have given us, kind people. Next is another, Calvin Parker. He was one of the two gentlemen that were claimed to be abducted by aliens in Pascagoula in 1973.
Oh, no!
Now he has died.
Damn it.
Yes. According to a friend of the family, Parker passed away on August 24, 2023, after a long battle with kidney cancer, and he was at his home, surrounded by loved ones, including his wife, Waynette.
R.I.P.
And in case no one knows what the Pascagoula incident is, I mean, I can't really tell you much except it's an alien abduction case, but if you know anything in this field about certain aliens and how they look, it's the aliens that kind of look a little bit like the Michelin Man, and they got the spike heads.
Terrifying.
Anyway, the Arrow, which is the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, has now a website up that people, the public, can report their UAP sightings.
Whoa, that's like us.
Yeah, that's almost like we could have already done that.
Uh-huh.
Forever ago, uh-huh. Or we don't need a website for it. We can just like put it on Facebook,
put it
like
on Reddit.
Reddit, yeah. But anyway,
isn't that what fucking what's his name for the Black Hat Kids did? Not Reddit, but put it on a message board.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Brian Bethel.
Yeah.
God, I remember the name. How?
So proud of you.
Wow. So yeah, there's some stuff I like to touch on. There's a new species of human ancestor out there, Homo bodoensis or bodoensis. I'm not sure exactly how you say it.
That's not fun.
I know, but it's just, yeah, it's a busy week, man.
Know what I want? I want somebody to finally come out and tell the truth about the fucking mantis men, because those are the aliens that scare the fuck out of me.
Honestly, probably any type of alien scares the fuck out of me, but especially mantis men.
I know, mantis men are the most terrifying.
Oh, I know. Have you just looked at a mantis? Looked at a man?
I had one on my door the other day that I accidentally knocked off, and then he looked back at me like I offended him, and I'm scared for my life now.
Yeah, because he's probably going to go get his mom and dad, the mantis men, and come back and just fucking pillage and destroy your whole house.
Yeah.
And you.
Yeah. I'm not a fan. But, like, yeah, just imagine just something fucking like that just looking through your window. No, I don't like it.
Absolutely not.
I don't like it. It'd be awful. But there's so many stories out there about them, and I'm like, that's the alien species I don't want to see.
I wonder, like, so I've heard things about the Hat Man and Shadow People and some similar features that people have, you know, basically talked about that they all saw. Like, yeah, we see, well, the Hat Man, for example, he always has some big, long hat, or Shadow People always seem to have some kind of either no face or real exaggerated eyeballs and mouth. Ew, that just looks like a gray, but, you know, folded arms like a mantis. But for the most part, big head, gray skin, black eyes, big black eyes. Yeah, that just looks like a gray. I wonder with the whole Hat Man and Shadow People ordeal, you know, people talk about how the brain can't remember faces. Obviously, I'm looking at you. I know what your face looks like. But if I was to draw it just from my memory, it'd be a little obscure.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's anything like that that falls together with the witnesses and their mantis men.
Maybe.
Why would the brain keep wanting to make something look like a big insect? Specifically, like a praying mantis. I don't know.
All I know is that they're terrifying.
And what if that's it? And what if for some odd reason that one of the main things that the human brain really doesn't fucking like is the idea of a praying mantis, and somehow we project that image onto certain things that we don't have a reason for or an explanation for.
Anytime I think of like insect aliens, I also think about Starship Troopers, and I'm like, nope, don't like that either.
I don't want any insect whatsoever as an alien.
Yeah, no, they're just they're always terrifying.
So my first real piece of news here comes from Popular Mechanics, and I did post this in our Facebook group, which you can join, by the way, if you want. Answer three simple questions so we know you're not a bot.
Do it.
Unless and you're in.
So what if they are a robot and they want to join us? No AI? Are we against aliens? Or not aliens, robots?
I don't know. I mean, if it's sentient enough to play Baldur's Gate 3 and be as a horny NPC like they are, then I'd let them slide on in.
Okay.
Cool with that?
Yeah.
Okay, as long as you're cool with that, I'm cool with that. So this is about this mysterious golden orb that appeared on Alaska's ocean floor.
Oh, God, it's not the fucking orb from Skyrim, is it?
I'll let you look at it.
I don't know what that looks like.
It just looks like a deflated balloon.
Uh-huh.
But we have never seen anything like it. Alaska, what are you hiding up there?
Oh, God, I bet Alaska's hiding all kinds of creepy shit up there. Same with Antarctica.
I'm sure it is. But during a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration expedition, the NOAA, scientists discovered this soft golden orb about 2 miles underwater. 2 miles! Closer examination during a live streaming showed that the unknown object to have a skin-like feel.
It's probably some fucking animal egg.
Well, that's the thing. We don't know of an animal that lays an egg like this.
But it's in the ocean. How much do we know about the ocean? Not a lot.
Not a lot. And actually, according, is it this article or another one I found, that even though we have a plethora of species that inhabit our waters here on this planet, not nearly enough of them have had their DNA sequenced. So technically, if we can extract DNA from whatever this is, if it is some sort of biological life form in one way or another, we might not even, you know, it might prove inconclusive, but it could be, you know, the egg of a fucking squid that we've known about for quite some time.
We could splice it and make our new Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Actually, that sounds foolproof. Let's do it. But during a live stream of the Seascape Alaska 5 expedition, which aims to map, explore, and characterize deep water habitats in unexplored regions off Alaska, the researchers manning the underwater robot caught a glimpse of this shiny golden orb complete with a hole. Now, they can't really tell, but the hole seems to show either something going in or something coming out. Now,
it's a fish for fleshlight.
It's a fish fleshlight. Thank you. What's worse, that or mantis men? Who knows?
Hey, fish need to fuck too.
The team then discussed the best way to approach the egg. One saying, I just hope when we poke it, something doesn't decide to come out.
Oh, yes, let's just poke shit that we don't know.
And they did.
I did that in fucking Baldur's Gate, and guess what? It was a fucking mimic.
Got fucked? Oh. I'm just imagining anything you do now in that game, you just have sex. Get some weed killer in your driveway. Bow, chicka, wow, wow.
I did walk in on a bugbear fucking a troll. That was fun.
Wait a minute. Why does this not sound like the first time I've heard those exact words?
Because it's in a county that you come across. I opened up a barn door, and like little cutscene starts, and it's like, oh, it sounds, you know, there are sounds coming from behind this door. One of your party members is like, we probably shouldn't open that door. And there was an option that said, open anyway. So open anyway.
Sounds like gurgling. Yep.
And it was a bugbear fucking a, I think it was like a troll. Yeah, it was something. And then they attacked me. So I had to kill them.
Wow. Just like hard dicks.
Yes.
Or whatever the fuck a bugbear has. Was that the sound? Was it bringing back memories?
No.
Slurpee to make your pee-pee burpee?
Ooh, what the fuck?
Again, I can only make vulgar jokes.
Never, ever say that sentence again.
A slurpee to make your pee-pee burpee.
I don't like that at all.
Anyway.
What the fuck?
This fucking egg that they found, this fucking orb, ponder the orb. Oh, God. When the underwater arm reached out to test the waters of the orb, the team found the texture was skin-like. That prompted even more discussion as to the origin of the colored orb, whether some sort of unique egg casing or a type of sponge species. The group was able to delicately suction the orb for lab testing, but the theories on the true nature of the yellow-brown orb, the lights of the underwater machinery gave it this golden color, well, they thought had given it this golden color, haven't stopped. It's still as weird as it ever has been. I hope, my fingers are crossed, that it's some unidentified species, because...
That'd be cool.
Maybe it's a goose. Golden egg, maybe.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, my God. If I didn't hate geese enough, now there's ones that are fucking amphibious. No, thanks. Actually, nope. I take that all back.
Nope.
Carrie Howell, deep sea ecologist at the University of Plymouth, tells The Guardian, which this is from Popular Mechanics, not The Guardian, that finding new species during exploratory missions isn't strange, but not having a category to place them in certainly is. We'll often see new things, but we'll usually have a pretty good knowledge of what they are. What's unusual about this thing is we're not even sure what it is. Is it an egg? Is it a sponge? Maybe neither. We're going with egg because of its texture. It felt fleshy, and it doesn't have any obvious anatomy. It has a hole in it that suggests something has come in or gone out, but it doesn't look like any egg that we have ever seen. But yeah, if you're in the group already, or you want to be a part of the group, you can check out my posting about this article there. And if not, then just fucking go to Google and look it up yourself.
God, so angry. Calm down.
Okay, so this one, this piece of news, I'm still trying to wrap my head around because I don't understand it whatsoever.
Oh, good.
So I probably shouldn't even bring it up because it's probably going to derail the whole fucking show, but I'm going to do it anyway. This comes from alphanews.org. Don't like that either.
Hey, what are you doing on Alpha News?
Well, I came here from somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
That place led me here to the origin of the article. Well, not maybe not the origin, but one of the first.
Story's already changing.
Wow. So this says, Walker Art Center holds playful demon summoning session for families. The Walker Art Center has received millions of dollars in taxpayer funds through Minnesota's Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. The Walker Art Center held a pagan ritual geared toward families last weekend with a performance called Lilith the Empathic Demon. Demons have a bad reputation, but maybe we're just not very good at getting to know them, this the event describes.
Sounds like a spoof article.
It does, but I'm finding way too many of them to all just be spoof articles. The event, which took place at the Minneapolis Sculpture Garden, was part of the Walker's free First Saturday's program and featured artist Tamar Etten, who creates demon traps. Okay. Families are invited to create a vessel to trap the demon that knows them best.
Does Zach Baggins have anything to do with this? Sounds like he's something he'd be involved with.
Perhaps the demon of overthinking, and then participate in a playful ceremony to summon and befriend their demon. Okay. The event was designed for families.
This just reminds me of, you've seen Cabin in the Woods, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When the little Japanese schoolgirls are, like, all killing the fucking weird ancient demon in that one.
Uh-huh.
All I can think about right now.
I just don't understand. This is not at all what I expected to see. Like, hey, no. Like, it makes me believe that there's real demons here that they're actually trying to trap. And they're just trying to get the whole fucking family involved.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's like a picnic, demonic picnic.
Demons need love too.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's what they say. After designing your trap, Lilith, the empathic demon, will come from the dark side of the moon, okay, to lead you in locating your feelings. All right.
Playing Pink Floyd while she's coming?
Maybe. Using ancient Babylonian techniques. That's what the website says.
The fuck?
This collective and playful demon summoning session will conclude with a somatic movement meditation designed to help you befriend your shadows.
I've got nothing. Nothing.
The exhibition parts with the historical gender binarism that associates Lilith's archetype with unchecked violence and manipulation. Here, Lilith mediates the inner demons and renegades' instincts that are deliberately silenced. The exhibition details on its page. One image shows Etten washing what appears to be a placenta with a watering can.
Okay.
Etten also has texts from Lilith, apparently. You can buy them on her website. 31 cards to connect you to your demon. Oh, look at this. Etten encourages people to communicate with Lilith by texting Summon, we can all do this, to 833-575-1049. According to this article, the demon sends monthly messages with demon drawings and somatic instructions. Do I dare text this number?
That's all you.
You know what? I'll do it right now.
Oh, God.
I will fucking do it. I want to see what they fucking say to me.
I can't wait for you to get a bug on your phone.
Everyone thinks that. There. Done. Sent. What's going to happen? I hope some guy fucking named Dennis in Milwaukee is like, who the hell are you? He didn't tell me anything. He just told me to reply stop to unsubscribe or help. Oh, I've been summoned. Please add me to your contacts so you won't confuse me with any other demons that text you. Here is my contact photo. I'm not clicking that. I don't feel it.
I'm telling you, it's a scam. This whole thing is a scam.
Oh, God, don't do it. I don't want to die.
It all smells fishy. I'm so glad that you texted that.
I am, too.
So glad that you did it, not me. I already have enough scam messages.
I gotta say, going to walkerart.org does look legit, at least to an extent, I guess. I don't know. God, but I'm surprised.
You are gonna be one of those old people that fall for scams.
Probably not.
Yeah, this Nigerian prince said he needed my tax information.
Can't text me if I'm dead. So Tamar Etten here, how to trap a demon. Oh, God, what does she do? Lilith appeared on incantation bowls, a healing technology used to protect against demons who were thought to cause illness, pain, and loss. Just as scientific treatment is accepted today, artist healers of the time would create spells, drawings, and talismanic objects to bind demons, most often Lilith. Tamar Etten revives these rituals by creating demon traps of various scales and materials, clay, iron, textiles, but also proposes a conceptual shift told from Lilith's perspective as the healer. How to Trap a Demon builds on the artist's research into the insidious side of empathy, empathy fatigue, trauma healing modalities, and astrology as storytelling. This literally looks like an exhibit of art that you can go around and view. And then I guess partake in. What is that? That looks like a bloody butthole. What is going on? I think this place is a cult.
It sounds like it.
Oh, no, no, I'm part of it.
Uh-oh.
But yeah, okay. Mysterious golden orbs in Alaska, and now how to trap demons at your local museum, I guess. I don't fucking know. Anyway, moving on now. This comes from devinlive.com. Big cat roaming British countryside snapped in clearest ever photograph.
Seen this.
Yep. There's a couple of photographs that are going around. Anyone out there is like, what's the point of this? Well,
that big cat ain't supposed to be there.
Over there across the pond, there have been just about, you know, anywhere in the world you could say these days, there have been reports of creatures that don't exactly fit the idea of wildlife that they're accustomed to.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what the hell could this be? And for one of those over there are ABCs, alien big cats.
And when we say aliens, we're not talking about from space.
No. No, we're not at all. It's just they're not supposed to be there.
Yep.
I mean, technically, where they're from, nobody knows. But this is primarily like panthers, especially, because I hear big, like, black cats.
Yep.
So panthers or I think, what is it, mountain lions or cougars or so, they could have some sort of thing going on that turns their, like, fur and whatnot black.
I mean, it would essentially be, like, black. I mean, if we were to look out this front window right now and see a fucking panther outside, that would be an alien big black cat, because that motherfucker ain't supposed to be around here.
Absolutely. It's literally as simple as that. I made it way too complex. That was simply put.
Not simple, Jack.
A so-called big cat has been photographed in the British countryside, with documentary makers believing it could be the clearest ever photograph of such an animal. The picture of the large panther-like creature was discovered in the files of a zoology organization. Now, here is the picture.
That's definitely a panther if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely a fucking big cat, and it looks black. So what more do I need? In the photo, it is possible. I like how it says it is possible. Like, may or may not.
Yeah, that's just your typical house cat, for sure.
It's possible to see a large, muscular black cat lying in long grass in Smallthorne, Staffordshire. Oh, is that where we were at? I couldn't tell that by the fucking photo. It's just grass. The photo was accompanied by a handwritten note dated on March 17th, but it is unclear in which year it was taken.
It seems like every, like, I don't know, 10 or so years, I see articles about, like, alien big black cats.
Yeah.
Coming from somewhere across the pond.
Yeah.
Somehow they're making their way over there, whether they're escaping from a zoo or whatever, but you would think if they did escape from a zoo would be like, hey, we're missing our cat.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not. So who knows? Maybe it's somebody's pet that got loose or somebody that bought a pet and was like, you know what? I don't like having a panther. So they just let it go.
Or perhaps it's from somewhere else. I mean, like the next country over. And it's just hanging out in the woods nearby.
I mean, with the amount of environmental shifts that we are seeing in the world,
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if we see more species of animals start kind of migrating and moving to different parts of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think it's called industrial melanism or so, which is basically when some sort of region becomes highly industrial, mm-hmm. and that can affect, typically it's more like insects or so. I don't think it's like a big cat, but it can affect the pigment in mm-hmm. their skin. And maybe not exactly the first like creatures of that area, but perhaps down the line when they procreate and yada, yada, yada. Yeah, it will change the color of their skin.
Do you remember?
No.
This isn't a big black cat scenario, but it was an animal that was not technically ever supposed to be in this area. We might have still been in high school, but the black bear that was seen roaming around like the Eastgate area.
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, when was this? This had to have been like, we might have been just out of high school.
Well, it's interesting to me is,
but obviously we don't have black bear isn't around here, but this one had come up from Tennessee and somehow made its way through Kentucky and ended up in fucking Cincinnati.
Looking for a mate, probably. More than likely, that's what it was looking for.
Yeah, 2014, Union Township. A young black bear spotted in various places in Hamilton and Claremont counties over the last 2 weeks has been seen again. The bear was reportedly spotted on East Tech Drive in Eastgate on Tuesday morning. Police closed Klepper Park after sightings brought a flood of people to the park. Yep, July 8th, 2014.
Wow.
So
10 years ago.
So similar situation, you know, animals just moving from one area and just kind of not supposedly where they're supposed where being spotted where they're not seen.
Yeah, and whether that's by, like you said, an environmental change, maybe like a deforestation, or perhaps, you know, some sort of industrial component behind it all. Who knows? I know a lot of animals out there, even bears, have a very, very wide range of what they consider like their habitat, where they'll sleep, where they'll feed, where they'll mate. Yeah, so experts say, if genuine, it is probably the best photo of a British big cat that exists. I would say so. The image is featured as one of several potential pieces of evidence supporting the existence of such cats in the British countryside. They form part of a new award-winning documentary, Panthera Britannica Declassified, released on Amazon Prime by Dragonfly Films. The picture was unearthed by the assistant director of a center of zoology when he was working in their archives. Oh, here's the picture actually like normal. What we saw was blown up.
Still looks like a big old cat.
Still looks like a big old black cat. But the thing is I can't help but notice from this picture, how close was the photographer?
I mean, really, if it's a professional photographer, that's hard to say, because, I mean, those cameras
true.
Can zoom
that's
real
true.
Fucking good.
That's,
that
that's
one,
true.
That's definitely, because, like, from where that photographer is, you can definitely tell that they're from they're at a distance.
So, I don't know. It doesn't look that far to me. I mean, that looks like maybe, I don't know, 30, 40 feet.
Yeah, but I don't know. I have a feeling it's definitely zoomed in.
Which I can't. It might very well be. If it's not, I find it very strange that the cat's not even looking at him.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, it might be zoomed in. Or the cat just doesn't give a fuck.
He's like, I'll make a meal out of you one way or another.
Yep.
It does go on to say that these majestic big cats could be legally owned without a license in the UK until 1976, and they were very popular, being seen as fashionable status symbols at the time. When the laws surrounding exotic animal ownership changed, a lot of people released their big cats into the countryside. So, essentially, the animals that people are seeing today could very well just be the offspring of these abandoned pets. Moving on. So this is weird to me. I couldn't remember exactly what the title of this article was, but I knew that some sheep had been killed.
Oh, and no.
And I knew that 33 of them have been killed. So I went to Google and typed in like 33 sheep that died. And I found a lot of articles throughout the past handful of years describing like 33 sheep or 33 livestock killed in different places around the world. So I don't know if
coincidence.
This is a coincidence like in our vein of perhaps that there is something weird paranormal going on, or if it's just some odd fucking copy and paste type of article sort of deal that they bring up every few years for clicks. I'm not sure, but like I found two dogs kill 33 sheep in gruesome attack. Another one about 33 sheep killed in a serious dog attack, which is not the exact same as the one I just read. This was in Galway.
God damn, a dog killing 33 sheep? That's got to be a fucking fish. What the fuck is it, Cujo?
I don't know. This one, where did this take place? In Alderford? Alderford? But what I'm bringing up here is this one from Animalian, which I still hate that name. At the end of August, in a rural area of Peru, 33 adult sheep and lambs have been brutally massacred. Now, check this out. The authorities blame a puma. Locals blame chupacabras, even aliens. But on the night of August 29th, in the Peruvian province of Chincheros, in the district of Ocambamba, two farmers at once found their sheep killed in a savage manner. Each sheep, if this is real, let me preface with that. Each sheep had a deep hole right in its head, a little cylindrical hole right in its head. The lambs had their eyes removed. Later, it turned out that many sheep had also had their rectum removed.
Rectum!
First, farmer Emilia Ruiz Santos found 16 of her sheep lying dead on the ground outside the paddock where they had been at night. Then another farmer, Sanguindina Quispe de Palomino, I don't know how you say that name, I apologize, found 14 of her sheep killed in the same way. So this actually is two different farmers, not just one farmer with 33 livestock.
I just imagine coming across that scenario, like if it did happen,
I would be
like
fucking destroyed.
Yeah, like you come, like just say like your little like sheep farms on like a little hill, and you go up the hill, and you're like, oh, where are my sheep at? And then all of a sudden, you just like half your livestock is just mutilated.
See the fucked up part?
Are there photos?
There is a photo here, and yes, it does show dead sheep, but I haven't traced this photo to its origins. I don't know if it came from something 50 years ago or if it's been horribly photoshopped or AI. I don't know.
Those are dead sheep.
Yeah. Those are absolutely dead sheep. And that looks like perhaps the farmer, and the other one looks like an authority figure of some sort, at least.
Yep.
But following complaints to the authorities, members of the Ocambamba police station and civil defense officers from the municipality of Ocambamba arrived in the area. Coordination was carried out with the National Agricultural Health Service to assess the condition of the carcasses of the sheep and find out the details of the cause of their death. Ocambamba County Mayor Henry Vilches Arango said the incident had a profound effect on the local population. He also confirmed that all the sheep had no wounds on their bodies other than holes in their heads. Among the villagers, the news spread like wildfire, and many began to blame the chupacabra. Others drew attention to the similarity of what happened in Ocambamba with the phenomenon of cattle mutilation. Go, David Perkins, get him! Oh.
Wow.
Sorry. Too soon?
Wow.
Later, SANASA representatives, which SANASA is the National Agricultural Health Service, said that they examined the carcasses of the sheep and concluded that they did not die due to any disease, but due to the attack of a wild animal, probably a cougar. However, there are no external injuries that seem to show that a cougar was there. There's no claws, marks. There's no lesions or anything like
there
that.
Be bite marks around the neck, since it's typically the area they go for anyway.
They are typically found cougars in the Andean Highlands near the said area, so they very well could have attacked them, but none of the evidence of how they died in any way. So if you by chance notice that I've been talking about 33 sheep and I said one farmer found 14 and one found 16, where's the other sheep? Well, apparently those other sheep were not found dead or alive. They're just gone. They don't know where they went.
Wow.
So you could say, A, that perhaps they escaped with their lives and they're never coming back. Or B, maybe there was a wild animal and perhaps that dragged them off. The corpses of the killed sheep and lambs were buried in a special separate sanitary burial ground shortly after the examination in case if it was a disease, it obviously wouldn't affect any of the other livestock that was there. I know there was something else I read about this article. Well, maybe I guess it wasn't this article because I can't find it, but somewhere it mentioned that it looked like the brains were sucked out of the head. So it had the hole right in its forehead, on the lamb's forehead, sheep's
again,
forehead.
Again, it's the smart brains bug. Removed. It's the fucking brain bug from fucking Starship Troopers. We have to get fucking Neil Patrick Harris on the case. He's the one that was studying him in the movie.
So, not only cattle mutilation, now you have sheep mutilation. Maybe it was the Potosi Sheep Slayer.
Oh, no.
Maybe it came back.
Bat Squatch.
Maybe it was the Bat Squatch. Maybe it was the Sheep Squatch.
Oh, it could have been.
Yeah. Or maybe it was just trying to make more of itself and accidentally killed all 33 sheep by its penis.
Tremors, they skilled. The Graboids killed sheep in that movie, too.
That's true. We're on to something. But all right, my biggest news of the day, which I'm sure it'll receive maybe mixed ideas because it's not the total, like, the grandest story I guess I could have ended with, but I find it very interesting. So, Ape Canyon, we've heard of that. We know what that's like.
Yep.
To whoever is listening and doesn't know what that's like.
We need to do an episode on it.
And I plan on it. When? I don't know. But in 1924, some gold searching miners went to some area. I don't know what the name of the area was called.
Ape Canyon.
Beforehand. But now it's Ape Canyon because of this incident. And it's around Mount St. Helens.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is they went looking for gold. They found, you know, a little mine to search for gold. And came back to their cabin and decided to rest up for the night. However, during the day, some of the miners had caught glimpses of some strange-looking, hairy, bipedal men walking around, causing noises here and there. Long story short, they go back to their cabin to, you know, sleep for the night, eat, nourish themselves, and leave in the morning, but they're attacked in their cabin. There's rocks flying at the cabin. It sounds like these things are all around the cabin, on the roof. They're breaking through like windows and parts of the wood to try and get in. They're shooting at them. The miners are shooting at whatever these intruders are. And then finally, about daybreak, these things disappear. And I can't remember what part of the story it's in. Maybe it's here. But as the day breaks and they exit their cabin, they see one of these things off in the distance, and I think they shoot him numerous times.
Yeah.
And they watch the body fall into the canyon. They don't go looking for it.
It's essentially the Sasquatch version of Hopkinsville.
Yeah, actually, that's, again, Josh, man, you're on fire with these odd analogies. But yes, it works.
Or dog soldiers.
So yeah, it was a all-out attack between miners and Sasquatch, and you could say that the miners won because the Sasquatches gave up, and they left. So what's interesting about this story is that a gentleman by the name of Mark Mercell, who is a historian, he found out about the Ape Canyon case. I don't know. He heard about it, but he decided to research it maybe 2 decades or so ago, give or take. And he became enamored with it. He was in love with it and wanted to research it more. And so he did. He's the man that we can credit with actually discovering the cabin. You know, we have all these elements of the story. We don't know exactly what's true or false. Some of it's, you know, pretty out there. It's hard to grasp those ideas. But he went on a couple little expeditions out there just touring around and ended up at one point, I think in 2013, 2014 or so, finding the foundations of the cabin where it said it was to be. Found some of the original, like, pieces of wood for the foundation, found some other tools lying around as well that miners would have. So that puts us a little, you know, now I can put both feet into the zone of some, you know, this was a possibly a credible story. Yep. Now, there was another big find, and they actually discovered the mine that the miners originally went there for to get gold, which had not been discovered for nearly, 1924, damn near 100 years.
Yeah.
And they rediscovered it. The cool thing about it is...
there's a dead Bigfoot inside.
Well, they haven't been inside. There's a lot of rubble that's not necessarily blocking the entrance, but making it very difficult to get in there.
Yeah.
And I listened to an interview with them today on the Bigfoot Society podcast with Jeremiah Byron. If you don't know what that podcast is, definitely go check that out. He interviews a ton of people about their witness or the eyewitness accounts and such. Very informative, very cool. But they talk about how these gentlemen, Jake Braden and Jared Mitchell, found this mine, and it just so happens that these three were the great-grandsons of the youngest of the original 1924 miners, that miner being Leroy Perry Smith.
That's so cool.
It is cool, and I think they even said that their grandmother is into this stuff, or at least into the idea of Bigfoot. And yeah, I mean, there's some pictures here of them coming up on the mine.
Yeah.
And what's cool is that Mark Marcel, who posted this update.
I mean, you can tell why it was so hard to find.
Oh, absolutely. He had said, you know, I had been around this area numerous times, maybe 35 feet to the left, right, up, whatever. And I never knew this was here, ever. And they're talking about how it's a very treacherous hike. I mean, in order to get there, like, you know, just to walk 50 feet takes you an hour and a half over terrain like this. But the Ape Canyon Vendrawhite mine has been found. Now, of course, in that interview, they're all like, we wanted to go inside so bad, but we just didn't have, you know, the right equipment, the time of day, so they have to go back to do it. So who knows? Maybe sooner rather than later, we'll find out some of the contents in that cave, because I know it's on everyone's mind, but what if this is, if it is real?
As long as it's not the crawlers from the descent, I'm good.
What if that is where they reside?
I don't want it. I don't like those things. Those things scary.
So yeah, now we have more evidence into the whole story of the Ape Canyon incident that just keeps adding some more credibility to it. That's all there really is to it. And now to end this episode, you know, we discuss our things in science that somehow, in one way or another, can lead to the idea of it influencing the paranormal. Mm-hmm. Like, how did certain people come up with these ideas? Like, why would someone think that a certain creature does this, or that aliens exist in this way, or whatever that might be? But I actually haven't talked about this story on our program, but I did talk about it in our interview with our fellow podcasters, Ty and Bailey from Cult Talk Conspiracies. And they're part of a whole literal name, Cult Talk Network. If you check that out, they have a whole bunch of different shows. Conspiracies, Warhammer, American Pie.
Bruce Campbell.
And they are doing a ridiculous October. I think they nicknamed it Cult-tober. I don't know, little fucking fest where they're doing like an episode per day or something. I don't know how they do it.
Maniacs.
But they are absolute maniacs. But yeah, check out our episode with Cult Talk Conspiracies. We do have another one coming up in October with them.
Teaser.
I hope I can say that. Who knows? I mean, it's almost October anyway. But what that story was about a snake. So,
slippery little snake.
So, there's not, I mean, besides the idea of giant snakes existing out there and such like that, another element in the world of the paranormal about snakes is something called the hoop snake. And why it's called the hoop snake is because apparently this thing would roll like a tire, like a wheel. It would roll away. That's how it moved, which you could argue is not necessarily like remarkable. Oh my God, it's not the discovery of Bigfoot or Nessie or the fact that aliens have been here for 100 years.
Yeah, compared to those, it's kind of boring.
Exactly. And me, I mean, I'm not a big proponent on the hoop snake. I'm kind of give or take. It just sits there. Mm-hmm. You know, in my MetaZoo library, the hoop snake's probably sitting at the bottom.
Big stack over there.
Oh God, that is a lot. A lot of MetaZoo and a lot of magic over there. But the thing here, and this comes from inverse.com, researchers catch a tiny snake in the act of cartwheeling. It sounds so goddamn precious.
It does.
But there was a study published in the Journal of Biotropica, and it notes the first recorded examples of cartwheeling in any snake species. Researchers documented two separate occasions where the dwarf reed snake launched itself into an acrobatic series of flips.
Woo!
This article includes pictures, which is kind of hard to see the act of rolling, but you can definitely see it.
Yeah, unless we're in like Harry Potter world where the pictures move.
Well, that's true. But you can definitely see it at least in midair, moving, progressing along the terrain. But there is, I think there's a link, a hyperlink in this article that shows a video of them actually catching this dwarf reed snake cartwheeling. Anecdotal reports of the tiny cartwheeling snakes have long been known to researchers, but it wasn't until 2019 that herpetologist Evan Sang Huat Kwa was able to capture images of the snake rapidly twisting its body as it tried to cross a road on Mount Jurai in the state of Kedah, Malaysia. Now, Kwa is a professor at University Malaysia Sabah and an author of the new study, and included some photos here that, Josh, I will gladly show you.
Wow.
Look at him, just like, wee,
wee. Okay, wee. Yeah, I like it.
It's fucking precious. But they posted a video in 2022 that captured the behavior on tape, and it's likely that this flipping behavior is a defense mechanism, since dwarf reed snakes are small and they're even prey just upon larger snakes.
It's just doing that to the animal, goes, what the fuck?
Yeah. Just here to confuse me.
Yep.
But I can definitely see it, especially if you're on a hill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if perhaps you, I would even think, startle the snake, it would probably just get into that cartwheeling motion. It's a much faster way to flee. And I guarantee the other upside to cartwheeling away is that it probably leaves a kind of like patched scent. Like, I bet you know what? We can test this after we're done with the episode, Josh. We'll go out my yard, all right? And I'll let you cartwheel to the back of my yard, and I'll see if I can smell you the entire way.
Okay.
Okay? Because I bet sliding on the forest floor probably leaves a much more intense scent for predators to follow you.
Sure.
And if you cartwheel, I'm not sure exactly how, because, like, for an example, I think I've heard that rabbits sweat through their feet. And so a rabbit casually walking across the ground probably leaves much more of a trail, a scent, than if it just normally hopped. See what I mean? Something as simple as that. I could be completely wrong. I am not a herpetologist.
Yeah,
I am not a
zoologist. You could be talking out your ass.
I could be talking out my ass, which is basically what I do all the time. For hours on end when it comes to this podcast.
Oh, I know.
So, gravity seems to give the acrobatic snakes an escape advantage. When rolling down an incline, they can gain more momentum and tumble away faster. The element of surprise could also be a benefit to rolling rather than slithering, since the sudden airborne movement could startle predators even. Which, I think that's a fair say.
Yeah.
These impressive acrobatics remain an extremely rare behavior in the animal kingdom. Some invertebrates, like desert spiders and moth caterpillars, are known to roll or tumble in similar ways. So yeah, that makes me think, because the idea of a hoop snake, I probably originated in the States, I want to say. It's been seen in multiple parts of the world, and we're talking about Malaysia here, which, yeah, I believe this snake is native to. I don't think it was like in a zoo or what, but I wouldn't doubt it if other, especially smaller snakes, could learn this trait across the world.
Oh, I'm sure.
Obviously, if it's an extremely rare behavior, not everyone's going to see it every day. And the other thing is, I would almost bet researchers checking out the dwarf reed snake probably weren't waiting for it to cartwheel. They're probably researching it for other means, and it just so happened to just go, and they're like, what the fuck? Oh, my God.
I could see it.
But this just makes me think, oh, my God, these reports of a snake rolling around like a wheel. Here we have evidence of a snake rolling around like a wheel. What else out there could display a trait that we might think is weird, might think is ridiculous, but we just haven't discovered yet? So we have some dead people, some people that aren't dead, but maybe close.
Some dead animals.
Some dead animals.
Some
a
animals
snake that rolls
that
around like a wheel.
Aren't dead, but probably will be.
Yep,
soon.
Probably. Arrow launches its website where you can report now. Anyone from all over the world can report UAP sightings that they've had. Which
will the website be dead?
I don't know.
Soon.
I mean,
who knows?
It's simple to me. Arrow is part of the government, and the government leads me in ways that doesn't make any fucking sense. I don't trust them. So why would I report to Arrow? I don't think anything will be done. Obviously, David Grush, our UAP whistleblower, had also spoken about Arrow and its head of it, Kirkpatrick, in the July conference or whatever it is, the UAP hearing, committee hearing. Yeah, so I don't have full trust in the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, but I do hope I'm proven wrong. But yeah, a lot of strange news. I'm sure there's a lot more out there.
Yep.
Hopefully we can come across it and we can talk about it and share it with you guys.
I hope so.
Yeah. But that'll be it for this segment of TFR News. We will be back with Jeff the Talking Mongoose, part 3. I know.
Fucking.
That's going to be the title of the next one. It's just going to be a little asterisk and it just says sigh.
Jeff liked to sigh.
He did. And there's just too much on him. I can't.
I never.
I'm in uncharted territory here.
Ever thought we would get a 3-part series out of
Jeff. No one did. I'm sure there are people out there that listen to part 1 and think, nah, part 2 is a joke. There's no way I'd listen to it. But yeah, I think he definitely needs the spotlight for all 6 hours we'll probably give him. Jesus Christ. But anyway, yeah, that's been it for TFR News.
Yep.
I have been Matthew.
I have been Joshua.
And I guess we'll just end it there. You know what? No, we won't.
Oh, God, he's pointing. Oh, fuck, he thought of something.
I did, because here's something I keep forgetting to promote, and that is rating and reviewing us.
Oh, my God. Yeah, please, God, fuck, do it. I haven't checked the reviews in a long time.
I've checked it. No new reviews. The ratings have gone up slightly on Spotify.
Hey.
We're still at 4.9.
That one person could go fuck themselves.
why don't you do a little slurpee and give your pee-pee some burpee.
Stop it! God!
Hey, that's our next shirt.
No, it's not.
All right, it's not. Well, bye, everybody. Have a great
you
day.
You can.
Week, month.
Make it yourself.
I'm still talking. And rude. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Stay spooky. We love you all out there.
Oh,
and
we are at 4.9.
We hope you are you. God, let it go. Let it go.
That was a great sound.
I bet it was.
Sound like somebody like just picking up like a cum sock off the ground.
Ew. God, a Slurpee make my pee-pee burpee.
Stop. It's just the way that you say it. Just, don't like it.
No. Okay. So sorry.